Can you restate the title?
So I'm happy to welcome Dwight back to Many Rivers Books and Tea and to hear his talk on voluntary simplicity. Thank you, Dwight.
Thank you. Thank you all for coming out this evening. I want to get some idea of who I'm talking to. So I'm curious about what brought you here tonight. Obviously, the title of Voluntary Simplicity or Living More Simply, something like that, was intriguing. Most people are drawn to that in one way or another, and I wonder if I could get some idea of what some aspect of your life that you would like to see being more simple.
Lessening my addiction to my car.
Driving less, or being addicted to it.
I think there are times when I don't really need to drive. Addiction. It would simplify my life and add quiet if I didn't feel like I needed to jump in the automobile and go someplace. So.
Anyone else?
I've been moving away from stuff for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought it would be interesting to see what everybody else is doing. And then at some time in the past, I went on one of those groups with the Vicky Robin and what's the guy's name?
Joe Dominguez?
Yeah, right, mm-hmm. You know, about the money.
Mm-hmm. Your money or your life, that's right.
Well, I was introduced to the book about 20 years ago, and I got rid of everything, and I've accumulated a lot of things since then. And wanting to rid myself of the excess deadly.
Yeah.
We're just trying to live a more environmentally conscious life and just try to make our doing something every day to make the environment better.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else?
I'm aware of your pursuit of Taoism, and I was interested as to how that philosophy might influence what you're going to present tonight.
Okay. Well, the Tao has quite a bit to say about living simply, actually. Verse 47.
I do massage and I work with a lot of people. And sometimes it's very taxing on me and I feel like I'm being pulled in a lot of different directions.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's a way that I can simplify, it would be a lot easier to take time out for myself. You know, maybe I'll get some tools here and ask my friends.
Okay. All right. Well, those are why I'm here, to talk about those kinds of issues and to talk about a discussion series that's going to be held here starting on April the 9th, which are Wednesday, will be seven Wednesday nights that will cover voluntary simplicity and pretty much all of the topics that were raised will be covered, and I'll go into that a little more deeply later in the evening. I thought I would start by talking, kind of setting a context for voluntary simplicity. It's a tradition that goes back pretty much as far as all of the spiritual traditions. The Buddha, for example, left a very plush life to become a mendicant monk. Lao Tzu was a court can't think of the word for it. He was an advisor to a king in a Chinese court, and he left and rode off into the West, leaving behind the Tao Te Ching. And of course, the Christian tradition and most religious traditions have some kind of a idea that living more simply, shedding a lot of worldly goods, makes it easier to have a richer inner life and a deeper spiritual life. I thought it might be interesting to talk about a different aspect of this. My business career was in the investment business. I ran a securities brokerage firm in San Francisco for many years. And so I thought I'd kind of talk about our society and the problems that our society has raised to make it difficult to be to live more simply. Can we get another chair, Jim? And so I'll spend a little bit of time talking about involuntary complexity, which seems to be driving our lives these days. If you're my generation, you remember a life that had no TV, no computer, no answering machines, no cell phones, no technological toys. You'll also remember no frozen food, no TV dinners, of course, no TVs, no fast food, and essentially no takeout. There was public transportation that worked, at least where I lived. I grew up in West Los Angeles. When things broke, you repaired them, or you took them to a store that was called a repair shop. I think there's only one of those I know of now in Sonoma County. You didn't throw stuff away. The family ate together. You spent a lot of time with friends and in a community of people who took care of each other. Our life was a lot slower, a lot less hectic. Your family was supported on a single working person's income, typically. In your leisure time, you had a lot fewer choices, but you also had a lot fewer distractions. Now, we can't go back to that kind of a life. I don't think we really need to or that we really want to. But it's kind of a measure of where we are now. A lot of changes occurred over all of our lifetimes that have made living simply a lot more difficult. And living simply like that does have its attractions. It's frequently thought of as living outwardly more simply and living inwardly more richly. So how do we get to the present speed and complexity of the life that we're living? I'm going to talk about it from an economic perspective. We have an economic system that depends on constant compounding growth. Things have to continue to grow in order to be able to continue to provide a return on capital for all the investors in the world, which, if you have a retirement plan, includes you. And a return on capital that's invested requires, as a basic economic principle, compounded growth. It requires a doubling of business income every 10 to 20 years. It requires a doubling of production every 10 to 20 years, and a doubling of consumption every 10 to 20 years. So if it doubles in 10 years, and then it's going to be 4 times in 20 years, and then it's going to be 8 times in 30 years, you can see this enormous spin of growth. On top of that, a lot of population growth, even within our own country, but also especially worldwide. And I'll talk a little bit more about those things later. So there's a difference in our lives between the lives of the working people of my youth, where people earned a decent living, for example. That was the expression that was used could earn a decent living by running a store in your town and earning an income from the store and providing a service to your local community and being a part of that community. Now, if you go into business for yourself, the objective is much more likely to be building a chain of stores using capital investments from other people, other people's money, borrowing and leveraging that to be able to grow more rapidly. And that kind of a business demands a return, not just for yourself, but for those other people you borrowed money from or that who have invested in your business. And so the people who run those kinds of businesses find themselves in a position of not being able to think about the personal and local impact. The bottom line has become a great deal more important than it was 30 or 40 years ago. And they certainly also frequently put almost no energy into thinking about the impersonal aspects of taking care of the environment, taking care of the social impacts, paying attention to the impacts of those things that come from the expansion of those businesses. So now we have a lot bigger businesses and gigantic businesses that are drawing have essentially put all of those small local businesses out of business. A person I know who took the voluntary simplicity course thought it would be really interesting to develop her own version of one of those old-time local communities. She lives here in Sebastopol, and she decided to make a list of the local local businesses that she would go to in order to take care of her basic needs and to develop relationships with the owners of those businesses and the employees of those businesses so that there could be this kind of restoration of a kind of simplicity and meaning in her life that she didn't find when she went to the big box retailer downtown Santa Rosa and so on. So she, found a local dry cleaner, a local bookstore. This was before Bay Rivers, but a local bookstore, a local market, place to get her car fixed, places where she could buy shoes, a thrift shop where she could buy clothes. No one else sent. Well, there was one or two other places that sold clothes. She found she couldn't find any underwear in town. You have to drive to get underwear, and you have to drive to get a lot of other things. If there's a good hardware store, but there's no lumber store, and so on and so forth. So it was an interesting exercise to see how much time she could spend locally rather than driving out of town to get her needs met, the car issue. And she found that she really couldn't do the whole job here. And that was kind of disturbing. But that's one of those consequences of this economic system. Our economy requires two things of every one of you. It requires, or has required during your lifetime, that you be a productive member of the society, and it also has required that you consume. So the productivity issue, because you have this compounding growth, constant need to increase the amount of business that is being done, the employers and businesses are constantly looking for increased productivity among workers. And they need that in order to, in quotes, remain competitive. That's their rationalization for that. and to achieve that impersonal compounding growth. So over the period of time that I'm talking about, it now takes two workers to support a single family, because the way the society has been, the economic situation has been contrived, the work of one worker is worth essentially half of what it was worth 30 or 40 years ago. So it now takes two people to support a family. And so you got two workers where you formerly had one, which doubles the amount of output in the society. Doubles the amount of, and pays essentially each worker half what a single worker who supported a family had in the past. So that whole process of moving more workers into the marketplace, having both the man and the woman typically in a household or whatever couple, both of them having to work, got us through the 1990s. And then more growth was needed. Excuse me. So where do we get that? Industry is now increasing people's hours. It's finding ways to make people think that it's fun and worth doing or absolutely necessary to survival to work overtime or to work at home on the job for free, essentially in front of their computer at home. People are encouraged multitasking, in spite of the fact that studies have shown that it's not as efficient for people to work on a multitasking basis. We drink more caffeine to keep us revved up, to keep us on the go, and we may get a couple of weeks of vacation time, but many of us don't take those vacations. We let them expire and work on the job because there's so much work that's got to be done. I've got to stay there and do it. And if I don't do it, they'll find someone else who's willing to do all of this extra work. So that's the productivity side of it. For a radical comparison, I'd like to point out that anthropological studies have shown that Aborigines and our ancestors here in America worked approximately 3 hours a day to gather all the daily needs that they needed to survive. We may not want to go back to living in a tent or a teepee or a hogan, but it gives you a sense of what the trade-off is between having all of that stuff that some of you were talking about getting rid of and just living a really simple, basic life. So the other side of this equation, besides productivity, is consumption. To make this economy work, we need to consume more stuff, and we need to use more services every year, because if we don't, the economy won't keep working like it's working. Bush's solution to 9/11 was to go out and shop. It's your patriotic duty to go out and shop. And he isn't kidding. For this economy to continue, you've got to shop more, or you've got to utilize services more and more and more and more. It's an unending, forward-pressing problem. So if you walk around your neighborhood in the weekend and look at people's open garages, it's kind of a shock to see how much stuff there is that's sitting there unused, or maybe your own garage has that kind of stuff in it. If you look at the number of registered vehicles in Sonoma County now, it's more than one per licensed driver in the county. So people not only have a car to drive to work in, and their spouse or partner has a car to drive to work in, but they've got some kind of a fun car or a pickup or something else. And in my neighborhood, I live out in the South Sebastopol County area, you can frequently see houses that have 7, 8, 9 vehicles of various kinds, including the boat and the boat trailer and the trailer that they use to haul stuff to the dump, and you know, the driving mower and the off-the-road vehicle and all of that kind of stuff. And that's a consequence of this drive of our economic system. Planned obsolescence, things are unrepairable. We're excited to see what the next new thing is. Our computers are constantly being upgraded to the point where the old one doesn't work anymore and you've got to get a new one. There's a tremendous focus on technology to create new devices and new toys and new things for us to play with. And all of that stuff is driven, of course, by advertising. The average American will spend 2 years of their lifetime watching advertisements full time. If you spread it, took all it, spread that time that spread out over your life. So it's exhausting to live in this culture. It's hard work to live in this culture. And it's an economic system that is going to have to change in the next 20 or 30 years, or there's a strong possibility that human life will cease to exist on this planet, because you know, we're now running out of air to breathe, you know, global warming, water to drink. All these things are happening because of this compounding growth process. So most of these things that I've talked about are okay in moderation. There's nothing intrinsically wrong with any one of these things. It's the accumulation, it's the drive to have more and more and more. We need balance. And I've heard lots of people say, I need more balance in my life. But balance with what? We don't really have the vocabulary in our culture to talk about balance. And that is why I think it is worth considering doing some of this voluntary simplicity work for your own well-being. The valued activities in our economy, the high productivity and consumption, and our entertainments as well, stimulate the sympathetic nervous system. We're constantly stimulated to have an adrenaline rush in our system, a fight and flight kind of a response. The kind of terminology that's used in talking about most activities in our society is the battle or the war images. You know, the war, even for good things, there's a war on drugs, or there's the war to,
It was the war on poverty.
The war on poverty. There you go. And a lot of sports images that have that same competitive flavor to them. There's not much room for parasympathetic nervous system responses. Things like balance, harmony, peace, connectivity at deeper emotional levels. There's little room for awe and reverence, for love and compassion, for joy and serenity, for the peace that passeth understanding. Voluntary simplicity is a process in your life. It's something that has to go on all the time. Someone commented earlier that they've done all this work earlier, got rid of lots of stuff, and somehow it's crept back into their lives. So it's an ongoing process. As long as we have a culture that says we need more complexity, we need more excitement, we need more stuff, we need more services, we need more work, you've got to find a way to push against that, to find some space in your life so that you can exist in a more healthy and more balanced way. Dwayne Elgin, who wrote the book Voluntary Simplicity, puts it this way. To live more simply is to live more purposefully and with a minimum of needless distraction. To live more simply is to live more purposefully and with a minimum of needless distraction. So a lot of these distractions that are driving our economy don't necessarily have to be taken up. Living more simply allows you to understand and to step outside of the torrent of busyness that you're being swept along by. To do more with less, or to do less with less. It allows space in your life that doesn't have to be filled. It allows time to release that chronic muscle tension, to relax, to take those vacations. The word vacation has always struck me as kind of interesting. It comes from to vacate, to get out of this work world that we live in. And it seems to me that we don't really need to vacate our lives in order to have fun, in order to relax, in order to have a rich way of living. We need to inhabit our lives in a way that is more meaningful and more rewarding to each one of us individually. So more time allows us to savor and to enjoy life, the hedonistic side as well, the slow food movement, the childlike awe and wonder and joy and spontaneity that we rarely see people taking enough time for. It allows time to connect, time to deepen friendships with the people who you do know, who are part of your lives other than your workday life. To commune with nature, to appreciate nature and to develop reverence and gratitude for nature on which our life depends. To deepen your spiritual practice or your relationship with God. It allows an interior life. It allows you to nurture yourself with whatever it is that feeds you. It allows you to live more purposefully, to be self-directed rather than on autopilot. So much of what we do, the way our lives are constructed these days, is done on automatic. We get up, we eat breakfast, we go to work, we drive on the freeway, we get to work after that process, that experience, you're kind of a zombie already. You go through work, you come home, you watch television, you go to bed, you get up, you do the same thing over again, and it's almost a treadmill kind of an experience for many, many people, or for all of us in some parts of our lives, I think. So voluntary simplicity, or living more simply, allows a balance in your life, a yin and yang, to use a Taoist term for this. The soft and the hard, the feminine and the masculine, the easy and the difficult. To partake of both the busyness and the excitement and the vitality that's offered by our current society, and also the openness and the quiet and the meditative values that you can derive in your own personal life away from what our society is trying to talk you into spending your life doing. Living more simply allows you lots of choice, and running on automatic does not. So I'm going to pause here just for a minute before I talk a little bit about the course that we're going to offer, and ask if there are any questions or comments in relation to what I just talked about. Nice to just sit and allow a little space to grow in your life. And breathe. It's nice for me. Yes?
I came a bit late, but I was just wondering, does this course deal with people who are, you know, have a tendency to clutter? You know, and having this...
Yep.
It's not that they have a very simple life. You know, they even moved out to the country, and then yet they just can't get rid of, or they just accumulate, and they just need to learn how to give them space,
yeah,
and to breathe.
Okay. I haven't gotten to that part yet,
okay,
but I will talk about that. Is there anything else that is on your mind that I haven't touched on, or that?
I like the idea what you said about a self-directed life,
mm-hmm,
and it's something that I've been striving for a long time, so hearing you say it's really nice, because I think I'm like the only one out there who's really going for that. I don't want to be, you know, in the Starbucks corporate world and, you know, trying to live more freely. And it was interesting to me also how you said that people used to work like 3 hours a day. And now we work, you know, 8 to like 12 hours a day. You lose sight of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really like kind of a self-directed life.
Yeah. Good. That's great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone else? Yeah.
One of my challenges is in balancing the need to retrieve residual value in something that's broken. It's going to be good for something someday. So I tend to have a lot of stuff. I got the wheels off my wagon when I was 6 years old. I'm still carting those things around. That's not so much as I'm going to use them for something. That's just nostalgia. But the utility of something like, say, a broken hammer,
mm-hmm,
or something that could be repaired and used again in some way, or used for something,
mm-hmm,
is a challenge to me, because I'm always saying, well, you know, I might need that something. I walked into my garage one day when I had a leaky gas line on my car about 15 years ago, and it was a weird car, but I just happened to have a tube. It was just the right size. This is the right diameter to put between the fuel pump and the carburetor. So, wow! Just because I had hoarded it. Mm-hmm. So I've got all this stuff that,
yeah,
people would tell me is junk. But it's only junk until you need it. Then it's not junk anymore.
Yeah, that's so true. And both of the comments that I just heard remind me that living a simple life is not easy, and particularly in a society which doesn't value it. And one of the really tremendous values of taking a course like this is that you get support for making the change. It's not, if you hear from other people, as you were mentioning, that self-directed life is a good way to go, and here's how I'm going about it, and you can share and talk about these things, then you have a little support group that you can work with. And my own personal experience with this course in voluntary simplicity was that a friend of mine took it, and she brought the book home, and I borrowed it and looked at it, and it looked interesting. And so my partner and I, we got a group of people together on our street, and we did the course. And it was a and I already knew about most of these things. None of them were all that surprising. You know, how to create more time, how to save more money, how to cut down your credit card debt, how to get rid of your stuff, all those things. But doing it is not easy, because you're exhausted. You've been working all day. You've been watching all those TV shows. You've been doing all those, all that shopping, you know, all those things that we hear we need to be doing. So this is a way to make some space for yourself. I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. Let me just tell you a little bit about the Northwest Earth Institute, which was founded in 1993 by Dick and Jean Roy, who are still active in the organization, to try to support Mother Earth. And the way that they decided to work with it was to not try to save the rainforest or change our attitudes toward pesticides or those kinds of things, the big picture, but to look at each of us individually and how we can change the world for ourselves. You can't change all that out there, but you can change your own life. So how to go about that was their struggle. And they developed a series of courses, Voluntary Simplicity, Choices for Sustainability, Deep Ecology, A Sense of Place, Globalization, Global Warming. There's a new one that's just started on food, eating better. And there's one for parents of young children called Healthy Children, Healthy Planet. And these courses took off in the Northwest. Little groups of people got together, like I'm hoping to get a group or two together tonight. And they did the course, and they really liked it, and they talked to their friends, and their friends started doing it. And pretty soon, it was a pretty large thing going, and it started to spread outside of the Northwest. So since then, the Northwest Earth Institute has formed a group of sister institutes all over the United States. There are now 21 of them, including the Northern California Earth Institute, which is housed currently at the Hutchins Institute at Sonoma State University. And there are over 550 communities in all of the states where these courses have been given to over 65,000 people now. So they're very carefully put together and very well designed and very well tested courses. And they are designed to look at how we can help ourselves to help the earth to be a better place to live. So the two big problems that are facing us from the perspective of the Earth Institutes are the population growth in the world and Western-style consumption. Population growth, in 1900, there were 1.5 billion people on the planet. In the year 2000, there were 6.1 billion. And it is headed for 9 to 12 billion. It is hoped that by environmentalists and other planners, the people in the United Nations in particular, that it can be kept to 8 billion. But it's way too many people for the planet. And there's not a whole lot we can do about that individually, except not have any more people than, as children then, we'll replace ourselves. But Western consumption is something that we can do about, can do something about, because we are all big participants in it. 20% of the world's population uses 80% of the world's resources, and that 20 out of that 20%, the United States is over half of it. We generate and use an enormous amount of resources. And so we can look at Western style consumption and try and figure out, well, what can we do about it? Part of it is this structural system that I just talked about earlier, the economic system, and the whole societal system that supports that and is bought into it. And part of it is your own individual free will. Each of us can just stop doing it. Now, just stop, it's not that easy. But we can stop doing it by exercising our free will. And these, this course, the Voluntary Simplicity course, and the other courses that the Earth Institutes are offering, are designed not to teach you a bunch of ideas, a bunch of facts, a bunch of statistics. They're designed to address your habits, your actions, your values, your attitudes, and to help you to change those things little by little to the degree that you want to. There is no agenda in the course to tell you, you know, you've got to do this, you've got to do that. It's to meet you at whatever place you are and help you to look at your personal values, look at your attitudes toward the way that you live, your attitude toward the car, your attitude toward the mall, your attitude toward fast food, all of those kinds of things, and to help you to decide what you want to do about those attitudes and those values. It also is designed to help you to change your habits. It's hard to not just do it the way everybody else is doing it. You know, go to the store, take the plastic bag down, and put your produce in it. Well, you have a choice. You can bring cloth bags. You could recycle the plastic bags. You can carry it out in your hands. Those are all choices. But you have to break a habit that you have that's automatic, that involves forgetting to bring your cloth bag with you, going to the store, forgetting to take your recycled plastic bags, using a lot of plastic bags there, taking a paper bag to put the plastic bags into, or the checker has already put the stuff in another plastic bag, so you take all that stuff and you take it home, because you're used to it. It's a habit. So part of what the course tries to help you to do is to change those habits, or to decide which habits you want to change, because you're not going to change all of them. It also will help you to take action in little ways that satisfy you personally. For example, when I first took this course, I had a bunch of junk in my garage that I thought would be useful sometime. Like I had a weed eater that didn't work very... I mean, it was okay, it worked fine, but I have a fairly good-sized place and it didn't have enough power to really take care of stuff. So it's sitting there. And, you know, I had a bunch of books that I just stuck in the garage that I wasn't using, and a bunch of this and a bunch of that. And one day, one of the people in the group said, well, I know, I also had a little television set sitting in the garage and used it for years, because I had a bigger television set in the front room, right? And one of the people in the group said, well, you know, why don't we just have a swap? We don't have to give anything away. We don't have to get rid of any stuff. We'll just change stuff between us.
That's a great idea.
And get stuff that we actually could use. So I gave away the TV. I gave away the weed eater. I gave away the books. I got some more books back. And it was a really fun thing. And, you know, so you start having a little bit of fun with this. And then, you know, people say, well, and while you're in your garage, do you really need that? And, you know, we just kind of got playful about it. And pretty soon we had a garage sale. A bunch of us got rid of a lot of stuff. And we went to each other's garages by permission and said, you know, what do you need that for? You know, okay. You know, you've had these wheels, just to pick an example, since you were a kid, and yeah, you're nostalgic about them. Are they really serving any use in your life? And you know, all of that stuff, whether you're nostalgic, and I'm not judging that particular incident, just an example, all of that stuff takes a lot of energy. Even if you have you rent a storage place, you don't have enough space at home, so you rent a storage place, you put all that stuff over there, and you forget it, except that you pay the rent, you know, and you work a little extra every month to pay that rent. And it's sitting there. It's just sitting there. And it's weighing on your soul. Because it's there. So you have to figure out how much of that you can tolerate. How important these things really are to you. You know, I've got boxes of stuff in my garage that are really important to me, that are not important to anyone else. As soon as I die, they'll get recycled. But there aren't very many of those, because I've gotten rid of most of the stuff. In fact, the group of us who took this course together enjoyed it so much, enjoyed each other so much, that we started meeting monthly for potlucks and kind of did more of this kind of stuff. And about 2 years after we did the course, one of the people in the group said, you know, I think I'd like to take this course again. And about half the people said they would. They would do that. So they did the same course all over again, read the same stuff, discussed the same material, and and I was one of them. And it was amazing the amount of change that took place, even though we'd made huge changes the first time around. So the reason for that is because you need that support. You need that help. And that's the real benefit of taking this kind of a course. So it's about values, attitudes, habits, and actions. It's not about ideas and thinking. And it's about the process of doing that. And it's about your own free will. And there's a kind of a range of attitudes that we have toward that. You know, one extreme, there's I accept personal responsibility for all this stuff I've got in my garage, and I'm going to do something about it. And at the other extreme, there's to hell with it. It's out there. I'm tired. I don't care. Just don't talk to me about it. So there's a range. And for everything that you're going to deal with if you take this course, there's a range of feelings that go from that one extreme of taking responsibility to the other of rejecting responsibility. So what we're hoping is that during this process, wherever you are on this continuum, you'll move a little bit more over this direction. Just a little bit more. And when you do that, I can guarantee you, and I can tell from a smile from someone who's done it in the back here, you'll enjoy it. You'll feel relief. You'll feel happier. Living more simply is really wonderful. And it doesn't mean you've got to be an ascetic, a monk. Sell all you have and take a begging bowl around to your neighbors. It's an incremental process. And it's a process that you can start with wherever you are. one of the people in one of the courses owned 17 vehicles. And when he finished the course, he only owned 9. And he was really happy with that. And he was really happy with the 9 vehicles that he still owned. He has subsequently moved to Willits out into the country, and he's down to 4 vehicles. And he is an electrician, so one of them's a van that he uses in his business. And his wife needs a car when he's doing his business. And then there's a couple of, you know, fun vehicles. But that's a huge step for that man. A huge step. So it's a process. So let me pass out the course descriptions. And I'm going to talk a little bit about some of these things. You can kind of go that way. And I'll also pass around a sample of the book that is used in the course. I'll start this over here. And you're welcome to come up afterwards and take a look at the book as well. There's a stack of them up here for those of you who want to sign up. But let me tell you just a little bit about the subject matter of the course, which is in this handout that you have here. The way the course works is this. It will take place at Many Rivers. You come in, and it's self-facilitated. I'll be at the first meeting, but the rest of them, you're on your own. And everyone who's in the course will have an opportunity to lead the group, and everyone will have an opportunity to do an opening. And the opening is just a little 5-minute thing that you do to help people to make a transition from all that out there to what you're going to be doing in here. And it involves telling a little story about yourself, usually, or sometimes you read a poem or you bring in an artwork. Or it's like a show and tell in kindergarten. It's really a lot of fun. A little story about yourself that has to do with voluntary simplicity or your relationship with nature and living a simpler life. And then the facilitator starts with a thing that's called the circle question. And a circle question is a question that everyone in the group answers that's about the subject of the material for the evening. And it's a value question. It's a feeling question. And it gets the conversation started, and frequently that's all that happens. People talk about the circle question. But there also are additional questions that have to do with the readings. The readings will take you about 45 minutes each week. That's some time you have to find in your life, along with the time for the course. And the class time, or the discussion group time, I don't really like to call it a class, is it'll start at 7 o'clock and it'll last for an hour and a half. So, and it will start on time and end on time. That's one of the responsibilities of the facility. So the materials are, the readings are really interesting. They're all very short. None of them are very technical. They address these values and attitudes and habits. They start with something about the meaning of simplicity, several articles that describe it, and the most interesting article of those, in my mind, is A Gift from the Sea by Anne Mora Lindbergh, who writes in 1955, that time when I was describing this as relatively uncluttered. about the lack of simplicity in her life and what she did about it. Living more with less is to try to help you to understand some of the values of living more simply. The possibility for spiritual opening and spiritual development. And there's nothing dogmatic about any of these readings. Then there's a section on your money or your life, which somebody was talking about, Vicki Robbins and Joe Dominguez, who wrote a book called Your Money or Your Life, which is a system for working your expenses down. Those two people in the 1990s and early 2000s were living comfortably in Seattle on $6,000 a year each. So they are one of the extremes of this continuum I was talking about. But it is possible, even today, even in our culture, to live on very, very little. And there's some discussion in there of how you might go about that, or at least reduce the needs that you have now for the amount of money that you have. You know, the average American adult owes $9,000 on their credit card. That's about $1,000 a year in interest that they are working just to pay somebody else. They give away $1,000 a year in interest to keep that credit card going. I mean, that's a huge burden. So there's a process for dealing with that kind of thing. Do you have the time? This is a chapter, a discussion on the busyness of our culture, the way that your time gets eaten up with all kinds of things, television and work and so on, and some wonderful things about transforming your time. I don't know if any of you have read Thich Nhat Hanh's wonderful discussion of washing dishes, but it transformed for me the way I wash dishes, and I, like him, actually enjoy it. It is really a pleasant experience. So it's that kind of thing that it works with. How much is enough? This is a tough question for each one of us. We're not suggesting that you live an ascetic life. We're suggesting that maybe you could find an enough for you that is much smaller than the everything that you're now absorbing. There's some important readings and discussion about swimming against the tide, because you know, if you live more simply, you're going to be a real oddball in this culture. People are going to look at you oddly when you walk into the store with your cloth bag, or when you give up your cars and have only one car, or use public transportation, or ride bikes to work. That's weird stuff. So you're swimming against the tide if you're living more simply. And that's why one of the people here is talking about how the stuff tended to kind of creep back in because of that pressure that's subtle but always here. And then there's a final chapter that sums up the practices of simplicity and gives you an opportunity to share with each other what's happened during the course. And there's a final meeting that is not on the list that most groups decide to have, which is a celebration of what they've accomplished. Usually it's a potluck. Usually it happens at somebody's house, or sometimes it's a picnic out in the park. It's a very rewarding experience. So that's basically the course and how it works. If you are interested in joining the course, I have a class registration form which I'd like you to sign up on. And we have the book. The book is $20, and that covers basically the cost of making the book and getting it here. So
all the readings are in the book?
All the readings are in the book. And they're simple, they're short, they're fun. And I'll tell you, really, the great rewards of this course are the processes that go on during the discussion group. You'll really get a lot out of it if you can make the time for yourself to do it. So are there any other questions about the course? And how it works. And
is there a fee for the course besides the book?
There's no additional fee. At Many Rivers, there is a tradition of Donna, which is making a donation to support this space. But there's no obligation to do that, and you can give what you can afford.
And can you drop in randomly, or do you need to make a commitment for that?
We really like you to make a commitment to the course. Now, if you know, and the reason for that is because the people who take it are going to have a fairly close-knit community. They're going to be, each of them, struggling with personal issues that other people in the group will help them with. And if you drop in out of the blue, they don't know you, you don't know them, and it kind of disrupts things. Now, if you know you're not going to be able to make every session, that's fine. In fact, most people probably won't make every session. But we'd like you to try. Any other questions?
If you're already part of a community and you wanted to offer this kind of course to your existing community, how would you do that?
Talk to me afterwards. You absolutely can do that. We'd be happy to help you with that. Anyone else?
So you said you'd be there at the first one, and beyond that, it's just really up to the group as to how it...
Oh, no, we'll have it. At the first one, I'll help you get organized. Right. You'll each sign up for one of the weeks as a facilitator and a different week as an opener. So you'll definitely want to be there for that particular meeting. So bring your calendar to the first meeting, and... so I guess I answered your question. And I won't be there because I don't need to be there, because you can do this work on your own. That's part of the point, is that when the course is over, you're going to want to continue living a simple life. You need to have the tools to do that on your own, and that's what the course provides you. At least it helps a lot. Any other questions about that? Jim has some more remarks and another handout which gives you the actual dates.
Thank you, Dwight.
So I'm really happy to be hosting this here at Many Rivers. You know, like, so I've wanted to take something like this for a long, long time. You know, like, so so it's just very auspicious for me personally, and I really look forward to seeing many of you there as well. You know, like, so thank you, Dwight, The course is going to be offered here beginning on April 9th. That's not the next Wednesday, it's the following Wednesday. So that might give you some time to sort of free up some space or something like that. And this flyer, I'm going to just put it on the counter over there, or maybe I should pass it out now and people can take a copy if you're interested. And I think I'm a little short, so it's in my computer, my high-tech computer, and I'll run up some more copies to people.
Oh, no.
And I just wanted to remind people, almost everyone here has been here before, that, as Dwight mentioned, Many Rivers Books and Tea has adopted the custom of Donna. From the Buddhist tradition, there is a donation bowl on the counter, and a portion of donations goes to Dwight to support his work with the Institute, but he can decline that if he wants to. And a portion goes to the store to support this space so we can continue to have events here on Thursday nights and other nights and make other offerings here at Many Rivers. So as Dwight said, any amount that you can donate is fine. If it's 50 cents, it's 50 cents. And you're welcome to be here if you cannot afford anything at all. If you can give more, that's gratefully appreciated as well. So thank you very much.
Is there a minimum and maximum number?
In the course? I'll deal with that problem. But it's up to the... It's typically 5 to 14. It's a good size. But if there's too many, we'll have two. We'll work it out. So you don't really need to worry about that. So I'd encourage you to sign up. If you're not too sure, you can come to Many Rivers. Jim will be taking the course, and Jim, I'll leave him some books, so if somebody changes their mind and wants to sign up, they can do that by coming to the store.
Can you buy the book tonight, even if you haven't decided about taking the course?
This is not a reading book. It's really a workbook for the course. So I'd encourage you to buy it and make the commitment. And you wanted to talk to me about doing the course separately, so we can do that if you'd like. Anything else? Well?
How can we find out more about the Earth Institute at Sonoma State? Is that online or something?
They do have a... You can go to... Put it in Google and you'll get it. Mm-hmm. But you'll get a lot more information on the Northwest Earth Institute's website. Okay. Which is nwei.net, I believe.
Is it a nonprofit organization?
Oh, yes.
So just, it's sort of simplicity how they even offer it for $20 for the whole thing is really, I'm wondering how they're earning.
They would be happy. They welcome contributions. Yeah. If you'd like to make additional contributions, they would be happy.
Give them your old stuff.
Right.